Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Christmas edition of the Digitally Uploaded podcast, which is a day after or 2 days after Christmas. But anyway, it's close enough to Christmas. I'm Matthew Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me this week, we have Matt.
Hello.
Alan.
Okay, so you did this in a different order, and I was about to say hello at Matt's name.
I do like to confuse Alan. And we also have Brendan with us who from Blue Volcano. He was with us a couple of weeks ago and he's dropped in again to talk more about games.
Great. Hello.
Excellent. So we'll listen to some smooth Hatsune Miku tunes and then get into it. Welcome back. That was Romeo and Cinderella, one of the better Miku songs out there. And so it is the end of the year now. This is the last podcast for the year. So what better time to look back at the year that was, 2016, and chat about the games that we played, because, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about how 2016 was disappointing in terms of game releases and all that kind of stuff, but it really wasn't. It was actually a really good year for games. And if you look back at what you actually played through the year, you'll probably find that there's an awful lot of games that you've forgotten that were really good too. So if we start with our guest, Brendan, what kind of games did you play this year, and were there any particular highlights for you?
So this year was a year where I didn't get to play that many games. Part of the reason was, that indie game dev lifestyle of, well, I don't really have much time to play games because I'm too busy trying to make them. And then I was also in the US for 6 months this year, during which time I didn't take my PlayStation with me or have a good enough computer to really play anything good. So most of my game playing this year was, I did play Street Fighter V for which I still do like.
Disappointment?
Well, no, see, maybe I haven't played it enough to know the disappointment. So I've just played it in little spurts. I remember at the start that, yes, it was disappointing. There was no single player sort of modes to speak of, but you know, got a couple of mates who are into the Street Fighter scene, so we had a good couple of weeks just playing versus at each other's house. And then the other two games of the year, I guess, Forza Horizon 3,
yes,
was really good. Still playing that. I really enjoy the fact that it's set in Australia, but all these little things, like just the fact that the cars are driving on the left side of the road. And the street signs are the same ones that you sort of see around, and the auto bins, all those little things just add to the richness of this this driving world.
Yeah, that game is really cool. I like how they also have just recycling bins as well, and like proper bins, like proper Australian bins. It's like such a strange thing to be like really really happy with, but you know, bins.
Yeah, I agree. It's those little things. Yeah.
So, Matt, what about you? What did you get up to this year? I know you played a lot of games.
Oh, I didn't really play any games at all. No, I'm just...
What's a video game?
What's a video game? Yeah, I've played more games than I can remember or than I can count, but I think some of my favourites, and I know you'll agree with me on this, Matt, Tokyo Mirage Sessions was that kind of, I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere, but it, and I guess in a lot of ways it did, and it was the Persona game that we weren't expecting and maybe didn't deserve because Persona 5 was so close anyway, but just, yeah, kind of came out and blew me away. I was surprised to see that a lot of other people seem to not like it very much. But yeah, what else? No Man's Sky.
They didn't like it because it was censored. Remember?
Well, there was that, but I also just saw, even from not within that particular group, there were a lot of people who just said complaining that the story was shallow, or which just seemed bizarre to me because it's really not. yeah. What else? No Man's Sky, I think, was definitely a highlight for me. And I feel it's been a few months now, and I'm still just annoyed that it's kind of, the merits of that game have been drowned out by everything else that's gone around it. The only time you hear people talking about No Man's Sky anymore is because, whatever side of the argument they're on, they're talking about the controversy around its marketing and whether or not it lived up to expectations, and whether they're defending it or complaining about it. That's been the center of discussion around it, which I think is a real shame because it's a really good game that deserves a lot more than that, I think.
I disagree, but we'll move on. I don't want to start a war because I know that both Matts love this game, and I'm not sure what Brendan thinks about it, but I'm really hoping that it's not positive, so I have some sort of backup.
Well, I'm intrigued by it. I haven't played it, and I do want to give it the benefit of the doubt. I feel that a lot of people's idea of what the game was going to be wasn't actually what it was, whether or not that was the marketing of, I guess, well, not the lies, but, you know, just from what I've read, that the game didn't live up to expectations set out in their press releases and so forth. So I've yet to cast judgment, having not played it. So until I do, then I'm on the fence here.
It's bad.
I guess it's really good.
No. I mean, for me, I try to avoid, you know, learning too much about a game before it's released. I made a conscious decision earlier in the year that, as a fan of Japanese games, obviously there's a lot of that debate about censorship, or, you know, more accurately, games being localized properly. And as a result, I try to block out what is being said about a game, what is being shown about a game before I actually play it. That way, when I go into the game, I can kind of analyze what is in front of me rather than going with expectations. And I think, you know, all that, to Matt's point, all the debate, all the conversation about No Man's Sky hasn't had too much to do with what's actually in No Man's Sky. And that's, I find that,
you know, it's tragic. Not a lot.
You don't have to like No Man's Sky. I mean, you can be like,
that's the point.
You really want to be. Not that.
You really want to be like me. You totally should be like me.
But, you know, it would be nice if we could actually talk about what, you know, the themes, the story, the actual content of
No Man's Sky. The drilling for 4 hours to get nowhere, and then realizing you're just drilling for another 4 hours to get nowhere, and then you stand and
actually,
drill some more.
Which is actually the point of No Man's Sky. And it's not, you know.
But it's so boring. Like, at least Minecraft has things that actively try to ruin your day. In No Man's Sky, they're just like little droney robot things that annoy me.
It's not a combat game, Alan.
I know it's not a combat game, but it's really boring anyway.
Anyway,
before we end up killing each other over this, yeah.
Too aggressive about No Man's Sky and turn the podcast into about No Man's Sky. Alan, what did you actually like playing this year?
Well, I'm going to continue this hatred train because I really like Battlefield 1. And I know that everyone else here doesn't seem to really enjoy it, but that's okay because I really like it and I think it's swell. I had an adventure last night where I drove a car for about half an hour and did nothing but drive a car. And that was one of the most fun experiences I've had all year. Probably because the physics are broken. The physics are really, really bad in that game with cars. So I enjoyed that sort of thing a lot. I like being wacky and crazy, you know, being a bit different. Also, just on a bit more serious tone, Titanfall 2 is one of the best shooters I've played in a very, very long time. And continuing the shooter train, Overwatch, because Overwatch, I don't really need to explain that, I don't feel. I guess also just little things. I don't know, I can't really think of anything in particular when it comes to like the little games, but there have been a lot of things that have sort of blown me away, like Inside as well. But we all expected that to be good. And as much as I do hate No Man's Sky, it wasn't a bad game, I don't think, but it was all right. So, you know, I have to placate the rest of this crew so that I don't get eaten alive or they don't just send me pictures of me for the rest of the time on Twitter. Yeah, it's been a pretty decent year, honestly. I mean, we have had games like Exiled Revelator as well in the fighting game scene. KOF 14 as well was really good. And, you know, Street Fighter V is it actually has been quite a solid year in gaming, even though everything else has kind of gone to hell. So yeah, hooray for gaming.
Yeah, I mean,
gaming saved 2016.
Yeah. for me, as a fan of Japanese games and all that, it's been a really good year, especially on the JRPG side of things. You know, we got everything from a new Atelier game to Knights of Azure from Gust. We had Final Fantasy 15 on the big blockbuster side of things. There was a bunch of kind of smaller JRPGs in there from, you know, Spike Chunsoft and Co. Exist Arc Kive, I really enjoyed. Then there was, you know, Let It Die, which was relatively recently released, but I can't see myself putting that down anytime soon. That was really good fun. Goichi Suda at his best. And then looking away from the JRPGs, there was so many Hatsune Miku games that I don't even know what to do with myself. There was Project Eva X, Project Eva Future Tone, which was released in Japan only, but will be coming out this way early next year. I obviously picked up the Japanese version, and that's 220-odd songs of Hatsune Miku goodness. And then there was the VR, the Miku VR stuff as well. So all of that. Actually, you know, Matt and I both kind of like the pervy games a bit, for want of a better word. So there was quite a few good ones there. There was, you know, Galgun was actually a lot of fun, I found. And, you know, Dead or Alive Extreme 3 was a lot of fun. So, yeah, lots of good fun.
So a bit of a reminder that this year too. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to follow up that pervy conversation. So being at Tokyo Game Show this year, one of the standout VR games was a game where you basically just sat in the bathtub with an anime. And it was, I can't recall what it was called, but, you know, maybe it's something looking into.
I remember that one too. I was at TGS 2. I was at TGS 2, and it was a really good TGS for VR in general. And, the pervy game side of things at in the Japan game industry is obviously going to be a strong driver for the uptake of VR. There's also Summer Lesson, which is coming out in English against all odds. That's the one where you're helping a girl with her homework and stuff for reasons. That's the best way to describe it. That's what it is.
I know, but I'm still going to mock the fact that you just have the idea of for reasons as the justification.
Isn't there one where you're like a landlord and...
Oh, yeah, God,
and you have to like manage your tenants who are all particular.
I thought you're going a very, very different route with that, actually. I was expecting something very different from that train of thought. Continue.
I didn't even know about that one. I'll have to check it out now.
I might just be making it up. I can't remember what it is. But, yeah.
Landlords.
Simulator 2016.
Oh, God. It's the new craze. I expect to see
a bit of a music break and let me check out this video of this game. And then we'll come back and talk about some more stuff.
Yeah.
Welcome back. That was a track from Bayonetta, Flying Through the Moon. I don't think there's too many games out there that use licensed music as well as Bayonetta did. So, yeah. Fingers crossed for a Switch port for that, so people might actually play it. Okay, so firstly, before we get going, Matt has happily found us the link for that game that he was talking about. It's called Happy Manager. It's coming from D3 Publisher, and you can check it out. It looks sweet.
This is absolutely the happiest I've ever seen, Matt, so you'll probably like it if you're like Matt.
Fingers crossed for an English localization.
That seems very likely. Well, if Summer Lesson can get... I didn't actually know Summer Lesson was getting localized.
English release for Asian market.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So like Dead or Alive, Extreme did.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is really... Speaking... I think that's really smart, like, just before you say what you were going to say, Matt. one of the things that seemed pretty cool this year was there was quite a few publishers that seem willing to leverage, or Japanese publishers that are looking to leverage the kind of the Hong Kong and Singapore kind of English-speaking markets to release their games unofficially globally, I guess, because the PlayStation 4 is obviously region-free. If you translate it into English for those kinds of markets, fans from all around the world will buy the game. And then you can bypass some of the controversy that would happen if a game like Dead or Alive Extreme was released out west and all the critics got their hands on it. So we'll probably see more of that next year. That was good to see.
Going back to what you're saying before about games that use licensed music really well, Final Fantasy 15, I think you touched on that briefly before the break, but I think that was definitely a highlight for me, which, as we talked about a few weeks ago, was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, that was 2016. I think that's probably going to be one of the games that I most associate with the year.
Yeah, absolutely agree. That opening where Stand By Me is playing as they're pushing the car along was just like the perfect start to a Final Fantasy game as far as I was concerned. I was basically kind of sold on it from that point on, as long as the game would hold up from there. The intro got me. So, yeah, good use of licensed music. Another good example of licensed music, which I'm not sure if any of us played, or I did, but I don't know if anybody else did. Mafia 3 had a really good soundtrack.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I've already got that on Spotify. If you have Spotify, anyone listening to the podcast, I would really, really recommend looking at the Mafia 3 playlist. It is god tier. There is some amazingly good music in that game, and... honestly, that game's really good anyway, so you should probably go buy it.
Definitely, yeah.
Like, it's a different game to what you'd expect.
I think on the subject of music, not just is it a great soundtrack, but it used the soundtrack in great ways. And I think one of the bits of that game that will stick with me forever is right near the start of the game, after these group of buddies have successfully pulled off an elaborate heist, and then... I Shot the Law comes on, and so you're just driving along, and they're singing along, and they're singing "I Shot the Law," and the law lost.
That's so good.
Just laughing and having fun. And
it's a very Saints Row thing that they did, actually.
Yeah.
Especially with the whole sing along in the car.
Yeah. And then it gets all very serious after that. But
yeah. It is a really good game, though. Would recommend you try it out if you can find a copy of it. It's not what you expect, which is why it's so good.
Yeah.
I think, and also a bit of a... I know that Matt really hates this game, but I really like it. So, Doom. I know that we said to never speak about Doom on the podcast ever again back when that came out, but I really like that game, and I can hear Matt seething already in the background.
No, it's all good, Alan. We know you're special.
Wow. I like things that explode. Is that so much?
No, it's all good. I mean, I think we can kind of segue. I mean, the thing that you could say about Final Fantasy 15, Mafia 3, Doom, all of those games are that they are perhaps nice surprises. That people might not have expected them to end up being as good as they were going in.
Yeah, actually.
I mean, putting Doom aside for a second, and everyone knows my feelings about Doom, but I don't generally play open world games, and I found myself absolutely lost in Mafia 3. Final Fantasy 15 has been in development for God knows how long, and nobody was expecting it to be good as a result, and it ended up being really good. So, there was this year of nice surprises for a lot of games, and I think that was a genuine trend through 2016.
Definitely, I agree. And another game on that topic is Watch Dogs 2, which
yes.
I think that was... came out, and I don't know, I could never play more than a couple of hours of the first game because it just seemed so just
nothing.
Boring and tried too hard to be like gritty and edgy without actually doing anything to make that meaningful, and just and then along comes Watch Dogs 2, and it's the same basic idea but kind of made fun, and that was definitely, I think, one of the biggest surprises for me after how much I disliked the first game.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to Ubisoft and being surprising, there was quite a few Ubisoft games that I found to be really good, that I really enjoyed, that I didn't really even think about going into them. I mean, Eagle Flight on the PlayStation VR was definitely one of the... It's definitely one of the best VR games as far as I'm concerned. It's just spectacularly well done, and it really shows off the strength of VR as a platform. And then there was the Assassin's Creed Chronicles games, the little 2D platformers. Those games, for a year that didn't have Assassin's Creed aside from the movie, were really, really good, and showed that Assassin's Creed has potential as being a series more than those big blockbuster open world games. And they were, oddly enough, a highlight for me as a result.
Yeah, I think that this year in particular has managed to sort of subvert a lot of the expectations, because I never thought that I would be playing, strictly shooters. And I pretty much just play shooters at this point because it's either Overwatch or Titanfall or Battlefield at this point. Which is awesome because it means that they've done something that makes those games really good. But also, I want to be able to try other things out, and I wish they'd fix it. I think also one of the most unassuming games that came out this year was Stardew Valley. And I think that's coming out on PS4 in like 3 days or something like that. But that game is basically just Harvest Moon, and it's everything I want from a Harvest Moon game. But it's also got like the Rune Factory stuff in there as well, and it's really interesting and cool. And it's one of those things that you'll go in thinking, I will not play this at all, but then you spend like 4 days on it and you've lost your life a little bit, and then you get behind on your assignments and you fall apart, and it's great. I'm not bitter. Not at all.
Just to clarify something Alan said there, Stardew Valley is actually out now by the time you're listening to this podcast. We're recording it a little bit in advance because we didn't want to work on Christmas.
I done gift.
You've been caught on a pre-record, Alan.
It was bound to happen. It was either I was going to record something accidentally in the podcast, or I was going to say something that would make us look a bit stupid. And I feel like this has only made me look stupid, so it's fine. I'll cop that.
Anyway, we might go to a bit more music and then come and talk a little bit more about something else.
Put a battle down, I'll take it to the street. Where there's no rules, take hold the gloves, rip dudes to death. Better prove my skills, so get down. My lyrical talents are wrong, battle smack down now. Gotta shoot to kill, I shoot to scale. Don't you be afraid, man's gotta do how it feels. 6 to 7 to 8 to 9, 10. I flip the script to make it to the top 10. Go. Shit. terror, but my only rival is my shadow. We run the pain back and fix my own error. Get low to the ground, it's getting better. Like I told you before, double up a dead road cheddar. L to the GC, stay late, get my call.
Welcome back. That was a track from Persona 3. Not a bad game. It's not Persona 4, but not bad.
I mean, you're not wrong. It does have 3 in the title.
It's okay.
It's going to be one of those days, I feel. It's just one of those days where everything's going to be slightly a little bit off. It's fine. Yeah.
It's okay. It's Christmas. We're allowed to be a bit silly. I did want to talk a little bit about TGS since Brendan was there and I was there, and it was the best show of the year by far. So, yeah, I mean, you know, from your time at TGS, was this your first TGS, Brendan?
It was my first as an exhibitor. So... I actually lived in Japan a couple of years ago, and during that time I decided to head down there just as a consumer. And it was crazy. It was great. It was a lot of fun. That was in 2010, and then, yeah, so 2016, and hopefully again in 2017.
So you've been a couple of times. Have you noticed, I mean, I've been there for the last 3 years in a row, and I've noticed a different shift in the way that the shows run, and the stuff that you see at the show. I mean, TGS has never been about the big announcements, because all of that happens at Gamescom and E3 before that. But one of the things you do see at TGS is the stuff that kind of goes on in that market and more throughout Asia, that we don't really hear about too much in the West.
Definitely.
For me, one of the things I really like doing at TGS is go into that section that they set up for Emerging Asia, and they get developers from, you know, places like Cambodia and Vietnam and the Philippines and Myanmar and so on and so forth, and they give them all these kinds of booths, and you kind of see, you know, how the local industry is in the Southeast Asia industry is kind of developing, and I find that really fascinating stuff. And you just don't see that stuff, the products that come out of those developers in the West at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see if there can be a more global role for some of those nations as their game industries develop.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's done well. So as you mentioned, yeah, you don't go there expecting these big announcements like you might have in the past. You know, the internet means that, you know, trailers are already released, and by the time someone comes up on stage, they're like, yeah, here's a trailer, or here's some tiny new piece of information, rather than these big blockbuster reveals. So having that Made in Asia section, as well as like the Indie Corner, which I think there were 100 in the Indie Corner that I was in, there was 100 developers there, and I think 40 were from Japan and 60 were from the rest of the world. And just getting to see the variety of games that people are making, really interesting stuff that hopefully Tokyo Game Show will use, will help those games reach a larger audience and be able to get out into the general markets easier. But most of the people I spoke to were more excited to be going to the Indie Corner than to the big AAA pavilions, because they said, you know, that's where you find the interesting stuff, the new and quirky stuff that, you know, you haven't seen before on the internet a million times before.
And you don't have to wait for like 4 hours to play one of those games. It's ridiculous. The business day. So for the people who don't know, Tokyo Game Show is split into two sections. There's the business days, which are on the Thursday and the Friday of the week that the show's on. And those days are basically for media and industry only. I mean, people get in, but it's the numbers are kept down to around 30 to 40,000 people at the exhibition. And it's a lot of suits, and people do a lot of business stuff while they're there. And on those days, you're looking at, for major games, you're looking at lineups for, you know, still 3 hours in length, for stuff like, Monster Hunter, whatever Square Enix has got coming. I think this year, I can't remember which game it was. There was a big lineup for something. Oh, Final Fantasy 15. There was big lineups for most of Square Enix's games.
I think Resident Evil 7 had a fairly large line.
It did too. And those were just the business days. Don't go during the public days, because the public days, the numbers are like three or four times as many people show up. So you can imagine the length of the lines. So if you go over to the indie section, you can kind of get games going. You can get on and play them pretty soon. And it was a mammoth indie section this year, which was really good to see. Probably the biggest I've seen in the 3 years I've been there.
Yeah, and they had us right next to the VR stuff, which was kind of good because a lot of people came over to, you know, check out the VR stuff, obviously, because it's a new kid on the block. And then because they're in that area, would just float around and come see what people are working on in the indie section.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The VR section was really interesting this year. Last year, or the years before, it's been kind of Oculus had a booth in the main hall, or Sony PlayStation, you know, had the VR section in its own booth. There hadn't been a dedicated VR section at a TGS before. And yeah, the popularity of that just shows how big, you know, VR is going to be in Japan once it has a chance to take off.
Yeah. Well, what surprised me in that section was this, the amount of headsets that I never knew existed from all these other companies. You know, when you think VR, you know, you think generally of, you know, Oculus and Vive and PlayStation, and then that's about it. Or, you know, the Samsung Oculus one. But there at Tokyo Game Show, there would have been a dozen or more headset units being made by a wealth of other companies. So it was very interesting to see that, and interesting to see what will come of that, and whether or not, I think HTC, Oculus and Sony recently announced this uniformation of VR platforms. So it's not as splintered.
Yeah, which is what VR really needs. Definitely needs to have some kind of standards that developers can work to, so that people aren't kind of having to pick platforms quite as severely as they do at the moment. Because if you get PlayStation VR at the moment, you're locked off virtually everything that's Oculus or Vive produced, which is, it's difficult as a consumer and it's no good for developers. It means the market's too splintered.
Yeah,
and because all the different capabilities of all the different VR headsets are so different at the moment, it does splinter the market quite hard, and I don't see the market really taking off until we have some sort of unified, I guess, standard, I guess, maybe, probably not the right word for it, but, you know, like having a sort of single style of experience that can be replicated on all three machines quite capably. Yeah, I don't see VR being a big hit until, you know, consumers can feel safe in buying, you know, a product and not having the issue of, oh, will it work on this or will it work on that? You know, it's a little bit dangerous, but hopefully they'll sort itself out within the next couple of years.
It's whatever platform Happy Manager will be on.
Don't worry, you're safe. That's on PlayStation VR.
Oh, I picked the right one then.
You did. I think that's something that I find interesting, because I haven't bought any headsets yet. I'm almost certainly going to be getting a PlayStation VR because I don't have a spare few grand to spend on a computer that can support VR in addition to the Vive or Oculus or anything like that. But it's still, knowing that I'm going to be getting a PlayStation VR at some point in the near future, I see all these announcements for stuff coming out on Oculus or on Vive, and some of it looks really cool, and I'm like, well, can you bring that to PlayStation as well? And I think, yeah, if there's a more unified system, I mean, there'll still be exclusives, of course, but I think it'll be a lot easier for developers to reach all those different markets.
Well, I think the difference is that, you know, when you look at actual consoles, PlayStation, Xbox and whatever, the exclusives come exclusively from the manufacturer. So Sony's the only one really producing exclusives for PlayStation. Whereas with the VR at the moment, basically everybody's producing exclusives. The crossover is not nearly as extensive for third-party games. And I think that's also confusing the market. I think people are confused about what games they'll actually get to play if they buy this hardware. And that's never a good, you know, a good sign for the take-up of the hardware. People will always wait and see how things pan out before they invest under that kind of environment. So yeah, we do need to find an easier way for third party games to cross over between VR headsets.
Yeah. I just also do want to say that they're all really, really good. Like, all the VR headsets that I've tried have been quite, like, impressive. Like, I've not sat down with the PS VR and thought, this isn't as good as the HTC Vive. It's as good, and it's because it's more of a, I guess, consumer product than the HTC Vive is at the moment. I think it's going to do very, very well.
Well, the statistics show, I mean, they might be updated by the time the podcast comes out, but the statistics show that Sony is currently in a dominant position in VR. Not monopoly style dominant, but dominant enough that it's the lead player now. So whether, I mean, if Sony can keep that strong traction going and actually become the dominant player, then it can start dictating terms about how VR develops to an extent. Whether you think that's a good thing or not, I'm not sure. I kind of don't mind it. I don't mind. And that's not just me saying that as a PSVR owner, but I think having a strong player in the leadership position is a good thing for the development of the industry.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Also, just getting back and sort of want to talk a little bit about other shows as well. This year's been pretty good in terms of showing off games in general, I feel. I personally went to PAX Oz this year, and that was one of the more interesting ones because I got to see a bunch of new amazing little indie games. A lot of cool things that I didn't really expect. And although Persona 5 wasn't there, I had a good time nonetheless, even though I did want to cry a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot. It was like a tsunami of tears, basically, for no Persona. But yeah, I think we can agree, pretty much everyone here, that this year's been pretty damn solid for shows and events within the games industry itself, even if the Game Awards were wrong about the best fighting game. Even with that, it's still been pretty strong.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And I haven't gone to quite a few of them this year, just seeing, you know, they're all just different enough to stand on their own, have their own merits, but they all sort of have that same feeling that they get gamers and people all together and everyone's excited. It's all about the games. It's all about, yeah, look at all this really cool stuff that people are doing, and let's share this. Let's have a great time going forward with all these games we're going to be making, and hopefully we see you at the next show and so forth. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. That was a song from Goro, Mark of the Wolves, which is Pretty Good Little Fighting Game, released on PlayStation 4 a couple of weeks ago. Grab it and play it if you like fighting games, or if you don't, you know, it might convert you. Okay, so for our last section today, since we're looking back at the year that was, we would be remiss if we weren't looking back on some of the crushing disappointments that just ruined the year for everybody. Other than David Bowie dying, which was, you know, the start of the year of hell for celebrity deaths, which was pretty disappointing. What about games, Alan, other than No Man's Sky? Because you're not allowed to mention No Man's Sky anymore. You've been banned. Were there any particular disappointments through the year?
None that I can really think of. I'm just more disappointed in the industry generally because there's just a lot of things that came out that didn't need to come out at the same time. We've already talked about this a while ago, but, you know, it's annoying. I can't afford everything and it's driving me mental. Also, I think probably, I didn't expect much of it to begin with, but Infinite Warfare was not good, like, at all. Like, they've kind of killed Call of Duty, and I didn't know how they could do that because it's usually just a cash cow. And, yeah, it's, you know, I wasn't expecting much to begin with, but the single player was not good. Multiplayer is free-to-play garbage sort of nonsense, and it's just, how can they mess it up? You shoot the people, that's the game. It's easy. You make a map, you sell the map, it's good, it's fine.
I think their
game design 101.
I think their problem was when they took design cues from Moonraker. That was probably, you know, mistake number one.
Yeah, but Titanfall 2 does as well. And it's so much better. It's so good, and it's been not sold at all. There's like 4 copies in Australia, apparently, that are playing Titanfall 2 regularly, and I seem to play against them every damn night. And it's driving me slightly insane. But yeah, Infinite Warfare is bad. Not really a disappointment. Not surprised at all. But yes. Also, No Man's Sky. I'm out.
Alan has now been muted. Matt.
Oh, I think you know what I'm going to say. I always take any chance I can to talk about how disappointed I was with Uncharted 4. Yeah, this, like, the history of this is that prior to that, it was like, I mean, it still is. It's a series that I really love, and Uncharted 2 especially is one of my favorite games of all time. And I felt like Uncharted 4 just kind of, I mean, obviously there was a lot happening behind the scenes in terms of change of direction, but I feel like it kind of abandoned a lot of the things I really liked in terms of the sense of fun and adventure and the character interactions, and replaced that with something else. Like, it was trying to follow in the footsteps of The Last of Us too much, I think. And for me, that just didn't work at all.
That and the fact that the environments made it look like this is a massive world to explore, and then really you're on a path.
Which I have no problem with. Like, that has always been the case with Uncharted, and that's,
I think it's more just the fact that...
Serious issue with that.
Oh,
I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
If you're going to create the impression that you've got like a massive mansion to explore, or you're in the wilderness and it's like this huge space and there's these two buildings on far ends of the, you know, map, and you're going to go to both of those and all that kind of stuff. You're going to create all of that impression and then literally give people like the most linear of paths to get to those spots. It becomes very arbitrary, and I don't like arbitrary design in games. This is an issue I've had with Uncharted, like, through most of it. But there are ways that you can do kind of, you know, linear games that still have that kind of adventure feel without making it feel like people should have, you know, an almost open world to explore in the process.
Mm. I think also a game that gets forgotten a lot this year was Quantum Break. I don't think anyone's actually said that name the last 3 or 4 months. But, you know, I had hopes for that game because Alan Wake's one of my favorite games of the last generation, probably because it just says Alan a lot, and that really spooks me. And that's very, very enthralling to hear your own name said in the game. And when it's like, Alan, wake up, I'm always a little bit excited by that. Yeah, and then... I'm going to be honest, it's really cool. Yeah, so Quantum Break was, you know, it was all right. It's nothing special, but it was all right. It's a bit disappointing because of that, because Alan Wake and because Max Payne 1 and 2 are so good and Remedy can do really well. I don't think that they really nailed the whole TV show deal that they were trying to go for, which is unfortunate because they really pushed it. But yeah, it's a game that I'm pretty sure that no one knows about at this point in time. I feel bad for them because they did try.
Speaking of people not knowing anything about anything, my biggest disappointment this year would have to be whatever the hell Nintendo's doing with the Switch is just not cool. The things by the time you're listening,
you can't just say an entire console is a disappointment. The console isn't even out yet.
No, the console itself looks pretty cool, but it's out in like 3 months, and we still know virtually nothing about it. And that's annoying for me, I guess.
But Matt, you don't understand. We're getting a Skyrim port on it. 5-year-old game. We're getting on the Nintendo console. Finally, it's what we've all been wanting.
Is that actually confirmed yet?
Yes, it is.
I thought it was like a video mock-up for the trailer only, and it might not.
That's even sadder. That's even sadder.
Bethesda's been pretty clear about it not being a confirmed release. Which
is... So I made a like. When I saw that trailer, I was like, good, I can't wait to play a 5-year-old game again. And the fact that it's not even coming out is kind of even worse. It's just...
This is the thing. Like, nobody knows enough about the Switch. If it was releasing, you know, Christmas next year, if it was like a November release next year, then fine, you know, that's about right. Nintendo's got to take the time to sell this thing, but they're not. It's coming out in a couple of months and we don't know much about it at all. And for me, that's a little bit disappointing because I really want the Switch to be successful. I want Nintendo to be strong again. I think the industry is better off with Nintendo doing brilliant stuff. But yeah, when Nintendo's biggest highlight for the year was probably, you know, a mobile game, that's in terms of it as a business. I mean, that's a little bit concerning.
Okay. I'm just looking up all the confirmed games for the Nintendo Switch and there's about 4 of them and 3 of them are from before 2016. Do you guys want to play Lego City Undercover again? Everyone's favorite.
I have never played that and I'm looking forward to it. So
actually, It's all right, but again, it's a Wii U launch title that we can play on the Switch.
Yeah, but... games.
What are they doing? I'm really mad about this.
I feel like there was some other sort of re-release confirmed recently. Like,
I mean, Dragon Quest X is on it. There's like a bunch of Dragon Quest games coming to it, which is cool because I'll probably play them on the Switch if I do have the Switch.
Dragon Quest X won't come out in the West. That's the
end. No, it won't.
No. That's in the MMO.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
Dragon Quest XI. Hopefully, will.
Yep.
Yes. But then, after Dragon Quest VII sold like 2 copies of worldwide in the West, maybe not.
I have no understanding of what they're doing. Why? It's so bizarre to me because, like, they have a trailer, and it's got these cool looking things on it, and they've confirmed nothing. Nothing. Nintendo, you got to give us something, okay? When Bayonetta 2 came out, we were like, yes, more like this, please. And you didn't give us more like that. You gave us, like, Nintendo Land 3. I don't want that. I don't want Nintendo Land 3. No one wants that. No one cares. Give us a good game, please. I'm done. I'm out. I'm calling it out. I'm mad. Someone else talk. Take over.
I'm like, Ryan, I'll list my disappointment of the year. And that was Catalyst. I think I'd been looking forward to that for such a long time. And by the time I did get around to playing it, it felt more of a chore to get through the story. Like the first one was much more linear. And I kind of like that. With this one, it seems to be so much more open world and falling into like a lot of the Ubisoft games is like there's a lot of quests that are just littering the city to give you stuff to do, and I don't really care much for those. I'd prefer this to be a very nice and tight, you know, 4 to 6 hour and then be done. But I've found that 6 hours through, I've stopped playing because I don't see the progression happening with it. And I had high hopes for it because I loved the first one so much.
Yeah, Ubisoft has got to stop making open world games. Like, entirely seriously. They've got to stop doing it. I'm a fan of Assassin's Creed. Mirror's Edge, we were talking about.
Mirror's Edge, yeah. That's what we're talking about.
EA. Yeah, EA shouldn't do open world games either, for that matter.
We just have everyone stop making open world games. Just
yeah, unless you're Rockstar or CD Projekt Red, and you actually know how to make an open world that feels alive, you know, don't do them, because they are just filled with nonsense. Like, I enjoyed the Mirror's Edge remake, or sequel, but I didn't get myself involved with a lot of that side questing nonsense. So, you know, it ended up being a fairly brief experience, which I was glad I didn't have to pay for because game reviewer. But...
Well, I think it's interesting that I mentioned that I don't like all those sort of side questy stuff, but at the moment I'm still just playing Forza Horizon 3 and going through and just mundane stuff like hitting billboards everywhere around town.
That's brilliant.
It is a lot of fun. I guess it's the way it's presented and the way that you go around doing that. In Forza, it just seems a lot more fun. It's not...
Well, because... I feel like Forza is different to Mirror's Edge because the design of the game is very much around the acceleration and thrill of driving at a high speed. And because when you're driving at a high speed, you're likely to be like flung around everywhere. Yeah, it uses the lack of control in air as a mechanic, as like a daredevil thing, which I think is really important. Whereas with Mirror's Edge, when you have so much control over your character, it's more just like, I don't know, like... It feels less exciting. I don't know how to explain it myself. I think it's not really sure.
It's pretty easy to tell. I mean, there's no kind of way of quantifying it, but it's pretty easy to tell when a company's going to make an open world game and then put side quests and stuff in there just to pad things out.
The feathers.
You know, when you start having to chase down, you know, bits of paper in an Assassin's Creed game because there's little icons all over the screen, it becomes pointless. But if a game is made as an open world game and the developers have really cared about making the side quest part of the experience, then yeah, I enjoy playing those as much as possible as well. To go back to the most recent example for me, Final Fantasy XV, I spent a lot of time playing the side quests in that game because they all felt pretty organic to the world and not tacked on just to add hours to the playtime.
Should be a license that developers have to earn before they're allowed to make an open world game.
It's like a pen license.
Yeah, it'd be a license that you can actually you know how to put together a story without having, you know, 3 hours of icon chasing to ruin the pacing of it.
Well, I think there was one open world game recently that made you go back and do like a bunch of just random side quests for no reason before you could get to the final true ending. And I forget what it was, but it was terrible. I remember playing it and being really mad, which happens often. It's whenever anyone sort of forces a player to do side quests for no reason, well, at least no reason from the player's point of view. Like, there's no intrinsic benefit to doing it, or there's no fun in it, other than, like, you know, I feel it's a bit of a waste, because why would you spend so much money and time making this open world to then only have it be boring and uninhabitable? And it's It's unfortunate because so many people look at the back of the box and think, wow, if it's open world, it must be good. But then there's just things that are not at all. And it's very sad. And I wish people would go back to the good old style of gaming so I can be happy again.
Well, the other thing is those open world games that have all that nonsense in them, they're not really open world in the sense that you can't really interact with any of it anyway. Like, other than the icon, whatever that icon is, it's not that interactive. I mean, look, if you look at, for instance, Assassin's Creed games, all you're doing is running around a city. There's nothing you can do with that city other than, you know, chasing the icons. So
Ubisoft, you can break the game with it.
Sorry?
You can break the game with it quite easily. It's always entertaining. I like just horribly ruining Ubisoft games by finding bugs within the first 10 seconds.
But I mean, those games would be so much better if they were kind of focused storytelling experiences. Because the reason you buy them is because they're interested in the history and the characters and all that kind of stuff. You don't need the open world for that.
Yeah, I feel like it would be a much tighter experience as well, just getting rid of all the fluff, because you spend most of your time in Assassin's Creed running from point to point, and that's not really fun. Because all you're doing is you're holding the stick forward and you're holding a button down. It's not exactly enthralling.
Exactly. But
there can be value in using that to create a world that is part of the story, not even necessarily by the way you interact directly with it, but just running around in a place that feels real, I think, and a lot of that depends on the world building, I think, can make a huge difference. And that was something I think Mafia 3 did really well, even though it did have a lot of that same problem of side quests kind of plastered around as busy work. I think it was good at getting you invested in the world just by having you exist within it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but even then, though, you have to do it well.
Yeah, definitely.
You have to do it well. Like, Witcher 3 does it insanely well because everything feels alive. And, you know, GTA does it well because everything feels alive. And I'm pretty sure Watch Dogs 2 does it very well as well. From what I've played of it, at least, it looks like it does seem to have a pretty, you know, vibrant world. But, you know, not everyone can be those games, unfortunately. And you're going to have things that are going to be boring and that are going to suck. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so I think that kind of wraps up everything we had to say about the disappointments of the year. I mean, they were minor. It was a pretty damn good year for games overall, and we're looking forward to 2017 being even better. So thanks very much for popping in again, Brendan.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully your game, your VR game, which has just been released, is doing well. And then obviously next one, next year at some point, we assume.
Sure to let you know the progress of that and further developments with it.
Excellent. I'd like to obviously thank everybody for listening to us through the year, our insane and sometimes incoherent ramblings.
To be fair, that's mostly me. I'm dragging this whole thing, bringing this whole ship down with me.
hopefully they've been interesting, if not entertaining, if not amusing. Thanks very much to Alan for, you know, being the guy that pulls the podcasts together each week. He does all the work, so you should all love him for that. Thanks to Matt for being the new co-host. And I won't say thanks to me. That's a little bit silly.
But, and thanks to Matt for being the host. There we go.
Thank you. About time someone thanked me for something. thanks very much for listening. We're looking forward to next year being a big year. Keep listening and have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.